This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Episode 15 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. David Foote and Patrick Williams. Pat is back from California. It took a little longer than perhaps you would have liked, but glad to have you back and can't wait to hear all about the experience and what you were able to garner from the press conference with Dave Andrews at his final State of the League address.
Yeah, this was kind of the real confirmation, you know, that's how much has changed in the American Hockey League in the last 5+ years. Having that event, I felt was a very fitting final one for Dave Andrews when he started this league in 1994, 26 years ago. It was a 16-team league. It's grown up to 32 by 2021. And then this whole West Coast initiative, so to have that final All-Star game of his tenure in California, in Ontario, just one of the real, crown jewels of the entire American Hockey League, I thought was a really appropriate way to start to wind down his time as president and CEO of the American Hockey League. And it was just, from start to finish, just a real first-class event. And really, in all the years I've seen it, the best I've seen yet. Really everything from the off-ice stuff to the on-ice performance and just logistics, everything I thought worked, perfectly. So, heck of an event out there, and it just it really sort of punctuated just how much money is coming into this league, and then just how much Western influence has really started to take over the entire league.
Yeah, we're going to dive deep into the Dave Andrews press conference. We've also got some news about next year's AHL All-Star Classic coming back up north. And coming up later on in the show, an extended chat with Mike McKenna, who was part of the broadcast team at the AHL All-Star Classic, and, of course, a longtime American Hockey Leaguer and NHLer as well. You don't want to miss that conversation coming up later on here in episode 15 of Around the A. Again, if you want to interact with us, you can do so on Twitter at Around the A Pod, and you can find us wherever you get your podcast. I mean, it's episode 15, so by now I think you know where to find us. Let's just talk about the event overall. First of all, Pat, the Atlantic Division wins. Vitek Vanacek is the MVP. A whole lot of eyes and headlines coming out of the skills competition with the FERC bomb that was 109. As much as there were headlines out of the off-ice stuff, the on-ice product seemed to be up to the all-star reputation.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting, too, because with it being the first time on the West Coast, and this league is in so many ways, Eastern Conference, Western Conference don't mix too much. You know, early on, it felt like there was a little bit of a getting to know you period for the fans in terms of some of the Eastern players. But once that was kind of put to bed, the fans got right into it right away. Really good turnout, you just saw. I mean, you see, like you said, Martin Furk, just the level still on display. You don't always get to see that in a game, obviously, because he doesn't just get to stand there and let go 109 mile per hour shots from the circle, but. You get a real good sense of the skill level, in skills competition where, you're not facing an opponent per se. So, it was really, really impressive. This fastest skater was also, I think the third fastest time ever in league history was set. So, a lot of really cool things. And I thought, the fans really started to get into it, especially early or later on, once they got, kind of got the feel of everything.
You mentioned the fastest skater, Alex Formanton, and I don't want to toot my own horn or anything, but I believe I did call it. I think I mentioned it here on this program. I may not have, but certainly on Twitter, Alex Formanton, fastest man in the American Hockey League, no surprise to the folks here in the city of Belleville. Incredible feat for him, as you mentioned, third fastest time ever recorded at that event.
Yeah, and think about that he had, well, that monster road trip. Then they play Saturday night in Belleville, get on a plane, fly all day to Ontario, get off the plane almost not too long after, and they're trying to go out and partake in this event and to go out and set that mark. Really impressive for that reason alone. So just cool, really cool. Players are into it. It's one of those things. I think there is some grumbling from players about the event early on before they actually get out there. You know, the travel is pretty difficult, with it being a cross country lead now. And, either one side or the other is going to have to make a long traveled trip. But once they get out there, they get settled in, they start to see some of their buddies, they warm up to it right away and have a really good time. And the league takes good care of them as well. And the players, it's funny, they love the red carpet events. I thought that was kind of a good touch by the league. These guys just in some cases got off a plane an hour or two before and they get there and they're maybe not feeling it completely. And they arrive at the arena and have this whole event. I mean, it was packed. And, I thought that really kind of got them into the whole spirit of the event. And from there, they just went. So, Formanton was a real phenomenal example of that. And you called it. I mean, you've been kind of tooting his horn for a while now. And, I thought I was thinking of you when that mark came up. That's, you called it way back. So, really cool event all in all.
You talk about the fan support. And I think part of what makes All-Star activities and events so much fun is the fact that it's a chance for not only players from around the league to come together in one spot, but for fans from around the league to come together in one spot. Were there a lot of fans from around the league making kind of a trip, an event out of this?
Oh, yeah, especially with it being California. That was obviously, very attractive if you're trying to make a nice event, a nice holiday from it. I saw fans from a lot of different Eastern places. I saw Rochester fans. I saw Hartford. I saw Lehigh Valley, Hershey. Some Wilkes-Barre. And that's just the people, I saw and just the jerseys I saw. But there was a pretty good turnout from the East, all things considered. And then it's cool to see. Then you had all the Western fans, huge Tucson contingent, San Diego, obviously, visiting a lot of Stockton Heat fans, San Jose. So you kind of got this whole conglomeration of fans from both sides of the league kind of intermingling. I thought that was nice, kind of bring the league together. It's a little hard sometimes. It's a big league now to have that fan interaction between each other, but I thought it gave I thought it gave both sides a sense of that's his one league. And I think especially for the Eastern fans, I think they were really impressed by what they saw from these Western franchises, and obviously the facility, Toyota Arena in Ontario. I mean, just first class. I mean, basically just a scaled down NHL building. And so it's good, I think, for that interaction to go back and forth, and you get some ideas going both ways, and pretty neat all in all. And but I know a lot of the players. I think Rochester's Jonas Johansson, he saw the Rochester fans in their jersey and they're cheering for him on the red carpet, and I thought that was pretty cool for him. A long way from your home base, and to get that support was neat.
We're about 10 minutes in here to episode number 15 of Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams, chatting about AHL All-Star weekend that just passed and a lot of news coming out of it. Again, stay with us. Also coming up on the show, Mike McKenna is going to regale us with some stories. He's also going to tell us if those radar guns are accurate, because there were some naysayers, I suppose, trying to say that Martin Ferk's numbers were boosted a little bit.
Yes. I don't know what to tell. I mean, as I think Mike McKenna said, he tweeted, not everything's a conspiracy. pretty sure the American Hockey League has bigger fish to fry in terms of just trying to put on the event. You know, this is a major undertaking for the staff of both the home team and the league itself. I'm pretty sure they're not trying to, you know, mess with the radar gun. So it's certainly matched up. I mean, he's Martin Furk is well known for having an incredible shot, you know, before this event. So, it wasn't a surprise that he was the one that was going to do it, but yeah, I don't think there was any conspiracy. I think it was just, here's a guy who knows how to shoot the puck. He has a 70 flex stick actually. So, no, the funny thing is, you know, like you think, all right, he's, you know, he's going to be like this guy who's like completely ripped and built and, you know, he's a solidly built guy, but he's not this, you know, huge, you know, 6'9" guy like Chara or something. I mean, he's, you know, he's a pretty regular sized player and, you know, but, you know, it's all technique for him and he knows how to just rip it. And, you know, with that shot, you know, that 70 flex can be tough because, you know, you get that, that whippy effect and, you know, it can be hard to control the puck. And that was just, that was kind of the knock early on him. He was like a pitcher that was wild. You know, he had a great fastball, but didn't know where it was going. And you know, that was the issue for Furk. But last couple of years, he's really been able to kind of corral that shot and get it under control and not lose the speed on it. So, you know, he has, what, 21 goals, I think, this year for Ontario in 34 games. So he's a player that knows how to bring it. And he's your classic in-between 4A guy. I think just in the right situation, he could be an NHL player. The knock on him is to spend his play away from the puck. I mean, that's the case for so many of these guys. But, you know, certainly when, you know, he has an opportunity in front of the net, you know, he can bring it. So, I don't think there was any conspiracy, though.
No, I don't think so either. But again, Mike McKenna will be here to confirm for us coming up on episode 15 of Around the A. Let's get into really what made the big headlines from AHL All-Star Weekend. Dave Andrews' final State of the League address as the president and CEO of the American Hockey League after 26 seasons. You talked earlier on in the program about how much of a hand he's played in expansion. And we're going to get up to 32 teams when Palm Springs joins the fray just over a year now. But there's more talk now about a relocation and an NHL team wanting to bring its affiliate closer to home. The Vegas Golden Knights, according to Andrews at that press conference, have shown interest in purchasing an AHL franchise, and they would have to purchase a team. There's no room for expansion past 32 teams. What was the initial reaction when that came out at the presser?
It was a little bit of a surprise, I think. It's a rumor that's been a little bit out there bouncing around, but I mean, this league, my gosh, like there's rumors all the time, and you know, 90% of them never come anywhere to fruition. So, the fact that he was as open as he was and kind of as forthcoming, I think that was the surprising part. You know, usually, especially about franchise issues, he tends to obviously not count on anything before it's done.
Right.
And he wasn't doing that in this case, but he offered up a lot more information than he typically does about franchise movements. So, yeah, it was, I think, just the Vegas factor alone, you know, the idea of a market like that coming to the American Hockey League is going to certainly raise a lot of, you know, eyebrows, you know, not in a bad way, but just, you know, in the sense of, I mean, the Golden Knights have had such a remarkable introduction into pro hockey, into the NHL. And now only a few years later, here we are talking about an American League team. So, you know, obviously one of the, you know, real premier cities really in the world, I guess, in terms of, you know, status and, you know, that nature. So, yeah, it was interesting for sure. And, you know, I think it would do well. You put a rink out there and just logistics alone would make it easier. And, you know, there's a good fan base that they're building out there. A lot of transplants, a lot of snowbirds end up down there. So, you know, it'd be a challenge to try to get the franchise itself. I think that's the only obstacle at this point, is trying to pry away a franchise somewhere. But if they can do that, and they do have money, and money does talk, obviously, then I think we could see it. And Andrews even mentioned it could be as soon as this coming season, 2021 in October,
which would be crazy for the turnover to happen that fast. I wonder about the appetite in Vegas. Not that I think it's a bad idea. I think it makes a fair amount of sense. And obviously, the Golden Knights have been able to draw fans since their cup run in their inaugural season. But is that the type of market that the league seems to think can sustain both an NHL and an AHL team?
I guess time will tell, but certainly the Vegas Golden Knights think it can work. And I mean, and they know their market better than anybody. And I'm inclined to, if a team like Vegas, who's had such a remarkable start business-wise and marketing-wise, if they're on board with it, I guess I have no reason to think it can't work. And I think the other thing, too, is even if it's not a huge business success, it's certainly from just a, convenience standpoint, from the hockey ops side of things, it's a big win for the franchise. So, even if you're not selling out the building every night, if you can get your players across town in 10 minutes, that's pretty nice. And, Chicago offers a lot of convenience that way. I mean, you can fly direct from Chicago just about anywhere, and you can be in Vegas in a few hours, but, it's still more of an effort than if they're in the same town. And if you're the general manager, Kelly McCrimmon, or, the management type, and you want to see your prospects at night, you can leave work, and shoot over to the rink 10 minutes away and catch your players and be back home that same night. So it's the trend, right? You're looking at the LA Canes in Ontario. The Ontario players all actually live in LA proper, right, and skate at the rink there, and they actually fly out of LAX, and so they're daily basis are around the LA Canes players and management and coaching staff. And then they just on game day, they shoot over to Ontario about 45 minutes away. And, it's a really convenient setup that way. So everything's about development. And, if you pretty much trace everything back in this league, that's the driving force. So, I think Vegas is as good a shot as anybody, and they've, remember too, there's a lot of people there like to watch hockey, but tickets are hard to get for the NHL team and they're expensive. So this kind of really plugs into a different market, different price points. So I think it can work great, frankly, and just certainly fits in nicely to the league in terms of geography as well.
You're listening to episode 15 of Around the A. David Foote and Patrick Williams, Mike McKenna on the way. You mentioned, Pat, about Dave Andrews being kind of forthcoming about this franchise information, but was there much talk, if any, about who would be the odd man out, who would end up being the one to move? Although I can't imagine they'd be too open about that at this point.
No, he was not open up about that at all. I spoke to him one-on-one afterwards, still wasn't open. And I think part of that too is I think he genuinely doesn't know. I think this is something where it's still very much in the negotiation stage, and you have to find a willing seller, and you're matched out at your 32 teams, like you said, and someone's going to have to decide to flip the franchise over to Vegas. Obviously everyone started kind of getting carried away, and this is where the difference and the distinction between franchise and affiliation comes into play. Franchise affiliation are not always the same thing. They're separate issues, and the Chicago Wolves are independently owned. So, they're not going anywhere unless they sell and decide they are. And, they made it very clear that they're not interested in doing that. So, then the issue becomes, all right, it becomes twofold. All right, well, where's Vegas going to get the franchise from? And then who will affiliate with, the Chicago Wolves? That's that's the more complicated issue. That's the one with many more moving parts. And I don't think the league has a real solid answer for that yet, but I know they're certainly eager to get a team in Vegas if possible. So I think at some point, eventually supply and demand will come into play. And if Vegas wants a team bad enough, they'll pay enough and raise the price. So we'll see. But, I think Andrews has negotiated much more difficult situations in the past. Obviously, the five teams when they moved out to California in 2015, that was a massive deal for him, and that took quite a number of years, in fact, to put that all together. But they'll figure this out, I think. But it could get a little messy, before it's all said and done.
And again, we could find out sooner rather than later. I think if the possibility is there for 2020-2021 to be the first season for Vegas, a lot is going to have to happen, and it's going to happen quickly if that's the case.
Absolutely, yeah. This thing moves fast. You're about 8 months out now from the start of the next season. So, the good thing for them, they have a rink in Vegas that they could pop the team in right now. So, you could do it that way. So then at that point, and you can run a lot of the operations out of the existing NHL front office. Maybe you add a couple marketing or ticket sales people, but for the most part, you can get it going up and going pretty fast, but the league is very adamant that that everything has to be done by May. They have the meetings in May. Wow. With the board of governors, and they're not going to, the most unique circumstances go beyond that, simply because they have to get the schedule ready. They have to get all the marketing deals in place, all that, all the stuff that we don't really think about, but are huge issues if you're a front office. So the clock's ticking. You got about 3 months. On the other hand, we have seen these deals come together before fairly quickly. The Colorado Eagles had their deal come together. The St. Louis Blues and San Antonio did. So it can get done, but it does require, kind of a real dedicated focus to make it happen in that span. So 3 months, clock's ticking, but I think all sides really do want to make the deal work. So I think that's what it does have going for it.
Yeah, we'll continue to keep an eye on that story, obviously, here on Around the A over the next couple of months as we head into the playoff push and now potentially get a team out in Vegas. But again, somebody would have to sell, and that can be a difficult thing to work out. So we'll keep you up to date on the latest of that developing fairly major story around the A. Let's talk about some other notable points made by Dave Andrews during his press conference. Palm Springs, an update on them starting in 2021, obviously came up. I know you got a chance to rip down to Palm Springs and check the market out. Is it looking like it's going to be a nice home for American Hockey League action?
Very nice. It's my first time in Palm Springs. Just a gorgeous city to start with. If you're a player, staff, coach, whoever, you're going to be very happy there. When I went to a restaurant, I was about a block or so away from the site where the new arena is going to go up. And Andrews actually mentioned that ground will break probably within a month. Really nice area that the building's located in. There was a pent-up, in demand there for hockey and just pro sports in general. They really don't have a whole lot in terms of pro sports there. They have a low level, minor league baseball team, but that's about it. And, every city kind of wants to have their own thing going. And a lot like Vegas, a lot of snowbirds down there, a lot of people that miss hockey, and you'll have a chance to see it live and in person. And, this is a case too, where you're looking at who's involved, right? You have the Oakfield group, which is, part of it involves the Lywicki brothers, one of which came over from the NFL. So, people that know how to market, people that know how to do business, make things happen, real pretty big movers and shakers. So, I think this has every reason to think this can be a huge success. Seattle coming in there as the parent team, obviously has already started a lot in terms of marketing buzz there. So that's a lot of the name of the game these days, is just getting your name out there and really generating that excitement. So, people, I talked to a few people there. They were pretty excited about the team coming in. And I think a lot of that will increase, especially once the building starts to go up and it becomes a little bit more of a real and tangible thing. But it's going to be a great setup. It's about an hour, a little over an hour from Ontario, about 2 hours from San Diego. So the geography works perfect. I think 3 hours from Bakersfield. So all that obviously is, dependent upon California traffic. But gorgeous, gorgeous area. It's going to be a kind of place every player is going to want to go play because, just first class all the way. Everything there is just, I can't say enough about how nice it is there. And, I think, it won't be long probably before there is an all-star game out there, shortly after the team starts. I think there'll be a lot of incentive for all sides to try to make that happen quickly.
There have been some rumors floating around the NHL this week about the name for Seattle. The Kraken is what I keep hearing. Any rumors about what Palm Springs might come up with?
Yeah, the John Hovind, who's kind of the guru of the Western Conference out there, he's the mayor. It's his name on his website. He's on top of everything out there, and he's reporting this week that the Firebirds could be the name. So that would be pretty cool. I think Palm Springs Firebirds just has a nice sound to it. You can imagine what some of the jersey possibilities could be. I know that's a big, big factor for you. And so that's kind of the early talk. The Firebirds, I think it sounds great. I think, it has that feel, it's actually a huge classic car town. They have a, one of the world's largest classic car auctions there every year. So it's pretty neat. And just thinking, the possibilities. But, these guys are marketing geniuses, and I know they'll come up with something good and sell a ton of jerseys and a ton of merchandise. So, I'm kind of interested also to see what the team colors will be, both for Seattle and Palm Springs. The trend now is to, use the same colors. It makes things actually easier. Yeah, just in terms of, equipment having the same thing. So, depending, I guess, what Seattle's color scheme is, and there's been all sorts of rumors out there about what that might be, whether it would be like a blue-green motif or maybe like the salmon-colored motif. I think either way, though, they're going to do a great job in that regard. So I guess we just have to sit tight, but I think we're all definitely, anybody that likes logos and jerseys and that kind of thing is definitely interested to see how this will come out.
Yeah, I like Firebirds. Obviously, there's Flint in the OHL that goes by the Firebirds as well. And have to say, as far as the Ontario League team goes, I don't love the logo. So I'd like to see something a little different from that. But the name certainly sticks and certainly fits with the area.
Yeah, and there was some talk out there earlier about like the patent. There was supposedly some issues with that. But you know what? Teams with money, teams with lawyers, usually can find a way to get around that. And, I'm sure they can work something out. So, but, it will all, I think, work out, one way or the other. And, if it is Firebirds eventually, I think that's, I'm on board with you. That's a really cool name. And, we'll have a Thunderbirds and we'll have a Firebirds all in the same league. So,
But they'll never play each other unless it's the
Calder Cup Final. They'll never play each other, barring a unlikely, probably this, Calder Cup Final. But you never know. We have had some weird scheduling matchups this year, even. So who knows? This league. One thing I think we've learned over the years is it's unpredictable, and that's kind of what makes it a fun league because you never really know what's next.
There's also a plan to build a new arena for the San Jose Barracuda. I don't think we need to spend a pile of time on it. We're going to get to Mike McKenna in 5-10 minutes or so, but I think just for the AHL club, I think it's an excellent idea and excellent development for that organization, and I think it will make a big difference for the team and for their fans to have a building to A, call their own, and B, that you can fill reasonably for an American Hockey League game every night.
Yeah, I agree with you. It shows, A, first off, that the team is committed to San Jose. They are staying. You're not going to build, obviously, a whole new facility and then split town, you know, right after. So, and just in terms, I think for the, like you said, the atmosphere will be a lot better. 17,000 seats is, that's a almost insurmountable task to try to even get any atmosphere in there, you know, yeah, for an American Hockey League team in that market. But I mean, you got the NFL there, you got Major League Baseball right up the road, you've got NBA up the road. I mean, there's a lot going on, a lot competing for people's attention, in addition to the NHL team already there. So this will be a nice setup, playing right out of their own practice facility. Have everything there. They're building new medical facilities, new training, you know, in terms of physio and that sort of thing. So it's going to be really cool. It's still going to be really accessible for the existing fan base. It'll be about 5 minutes or so off across town. So, you know, nothing too much will change, you know, in terms of convenience for fans. But just so they'll have their own building. That's a huge thing for teams. You can market it a certain way. Really make it feel like your own building, not like you're, you know, kind of, you know, renting the place or staying in a hotel. So, yeah, it'll be a nice development and, you know, real positive for the league, getting that market locked down and, you know, really kind of solidifying the northern half of that California division. So, big things coming. This is like the week of California in the American Hockey League. So, you know, kind of everything's all coming all at once. But that was a good little piece of development. The vote went through this past Saturday, or I guess Tuesday, and finally get that done. It's been talked about for a while, and it's one of those things that just kept dragging on. And really to finally get it set and ready to go, I think that'll be a huge development there.
Yeah, a couple more things to touch on. It has been the week of the West Coast for the AHL, showcasing everything that the West Coast has to offer to this league, but a little bit of chatter as well about maybe getting some Eastern Conference teams out that way to play a game or two a season. What was the chatter on the potential for interconference play?
Yeah, I spoke one-on-one with Andrews. We talked about a lot of things and just a lot of things that aren't you're not able to really get to during the actual press conference. It is plans are in works to have that continue. There's been some of it this year. There's a fair amount apparently of interest from the Pacific Division teams that would love to come out and play the Eastern teams. You know, to have, let's say, the you know, if you're Ontario, to have maybe the, let's say, Hershey Bears come out to the West and, you know, play there. One of the real marquee franchises in the league, or just, you know, let's say the Laval Rock, for example. So have a real recognizable NHL affiliate come out there. That would be cool. I think, I mean, you know, just talking to some of the people from out there, you know, a lot of them are playing only six teams here. So that schedule gets really repetitive really quickly. So anything they can do to mix things up, those specific teams are very easy to do. And, you know, for them, a lot of them, they're getting on a plane anyway. So whether you're getting on a plane to Texas or you're going, you know, a little bit further to the east, you know, once you're on a plane, it costs, you know, it's a cost is a cost. So, you know, they're not too worried about that aspect. And, you know, the main thing is it's just finding willing dance partners. You know, a lot of the Eastern teams are pretty content to stay put and not travel too much. But I think there is some incentive and some interest on at least some of the Eastern teams to make it work. And if you can find kind of two or three teams from the East, two or three teams from the West, and have them kind of lock up together and make a little trip of it for everybody, I think that's cool. I mean, we saw, you know, Belleville played Milwaukee this year, Rockford. I mean, it's nice to have some variety. I mean, you know, it's a 31 team league, and then you don't want to see the same, you know, eight or, you know, nine teams, you know, constantly. So I think it's something that the time has come for it. You know, you want to be a real, you know, major, you know, high level professional league. I think it's something you need to do. So I think there is desired to do it. Now it's just making sure all the numbers work. You know, I was talking to a few people, and costs are pretty considerable. It could be up, you know, in six figures sometimes to transport a team, you know, all the gear, all that other stuff, per diems, everything, you know, from, you know, the east to the west. So, you know, it's not a small cost. That's the main thing. But if you can work that out, you can really, you can make a go of it. And I think it will be really fun to see.
All right. Lastly, this might be a minor thing to some, but some changes to the veteran rule, which we talked about back, I think, on episode 2 or 3 of this show. Essentially, mm-hmm. you can only dress so many players who have played more than a certain number of games in the league. They're going to make a change to that, and they're going to put age into as a factor as well, right?
Yes. Let me try to figure out the simplest way to keep this you know, understandable for the average fan. So veteran rule is in place for development purposes. They basically wanted to avoid the league turning into just all veterans and not, you know, prioritize development. So they have a veteran rule, which veteran is defined as somebody who's played 320 regular season games or more at the NHL, AHL, or high level European. You can carry as many veterans as you want on your roster. I mean, you could carry 20 if you want it theoretically. You can only dress 5 veterans, however, for a game, excluding goalies. So, you know, there's an incentive there to not carry more veterans than you actually need. And then you can have a veteran exempt guy who's between 261 and 320 NHL, AHL, or European games. So that's kind of that's the groundwork there. Next season, with the new CBA, which was signed before this season, you will not, no matter how many games you've played, you will not count as a veteran unless you have turned 25 years old before July 1st of the upcoming season. So you could have played, let's say, 400 AHL games. But if you're not at that 25-year-old threshold, it doesn't matter. So this will allow a lot of those guys who are starting to get into that veteran status around age 24 or so, will allow them some extra time to, you know, if they're a late bloomer or just, just not have as much turnover, not chase them away, not send them over to Europe so quickly. Because that's what we've been seeing the last number of years is guys are 24 years old and they're going over to Europe. And you're like, you're not that old yet. You're not really a veteran per se. But it makes it so hard to get a contract once you get into that status. So, the main impetus for that was a lot of the players felt that if you're coming in from junior or Europe at 20 years old, you're at a distinct disadvantage compared to college players who come in maybe at 22, 23 years old. Right. So, you know, it was a proposal by the Players Association. League actually agreed to go along with it, which is the first time that's ever happened. League had always stood really strong on this point that they weren't going to bend on the veteran rule. But finally, they had some breakthroughs. And I think this will be a good compromise. You know, you don't want to obviously turn it into a league full of, you know, guys that are, you know, well past their prospect status. But those guys are still important, and they're useful for development, and they're all often, frankly, the top players in the league. So this is kind of it'll reduce some of the turnover, and it will also just, I think, keep the quality of play a little bit higher. You'll have better players, more experienced players, but you know you'll strike that balance. So the major development, not necessarily something that you know anyone but the more diehard fans will. Really focus on, but you know, from a team roster building standpoint, this is a major development for sure.
I think it just makes sense. It's tough to consider somebody to be a veteran when they're under 25 years old, and in a lot of times haven't played in the league for even 5 years. So to me, it's a perfect compromise. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it was getting a little ridiculous for the last few years. Just, I mean, these guys were getting chased away. I mean, and, you know, you're going over to Europe. It's hard enough to compete with Europe now with the money over there, with money in the KHL, the money in the Swiss League. You know, and I think it bothers the fans. I mean, you know, fans understand that there's turnover at this level, but, you know, it was getting ridiculous for some teams where, you know, 3/4 of the team turns over every year. And, I mean, how do you build any continuity with fans and marketing and just, you know, the casual fan even, who, you know, maybe recognizes a few players on the team, but When that changes so much, it's hard to, have that connection. And, that's a huge part of the experience for fans, is having at least a few recognizable players every year that they know and are kind of their own. So, yeah, I think this is a change that was long overdue, and finally it actually did come to pass, and we'll see where it goes, but I think this is a really positive development.
Absolutely. A lot of positive developments out of Dave Andrews' final State of the League address at AHL All-Star Weekend. This is a pretty talk-heavy episode of Around the A, episode 15, but there is just so much to get to. And when you've got feet on the ground, like we did with Pat out there, I think we'd be doing a disservice if we didn't touch on as much as possible. With that said, if there's anything you think we missed, if you have more questions, you can always get at us on Twitter at Around the A Pod. Pat has all the info if you tweet at him at P Williams NHL. And of course, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have and that we may have missed. Let's continue on this episode. We will get to the announcement about next year's AHL All-Star Classic coming up in a little while. But first, we got to get to Mike McKenna. He was on the broadcast team for the AHL All-Star Classic. He's going to share some stories about life as an American League goaltender. And it's a tough gig. And mentally, there's a lot you got to deal with, and really looking forward to hearing some stories from Mike McKenna. So that's coming up on Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Our All-Star episode continues here, episode number 15 of our first season. And what would an All-Star episode be without an All-Star? And we bring in a well-traveled man in the world of hockey, longtime AHL, NHL goaltender, now working as an analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights and out in Ontario for the AHL All-Star Classic as well. Mike McKenna is with us. And we should also mention his very extremely successful podcast, 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Thanks for squeezing us in, man.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for plugging the pod too, man. I need all help I can get with it. But yeah, man, like it's been a busy retirement, I guess. That's such a misnomer, right? You think you're done, you'll take some time off. Nope. I just decided to jump right into media, and here I am. So I've been really fortunate so far, learning a lot right now.
It's so funny because the last time that I believe you and I spoke was in the hallways out in Kanata when you were with the Senators just before the first trade of last season. And boy, what a whirlwind it's been for you to get to the point that you're at now.
That's an understatement. I can't keep track. I keep telling myself that I really need to take a thorough look at my hockey database and figure out the number of jerseys I actually did wear. I know it's in the mid 20s, and then you have to think about like training camps and things like that, development camps. You know, like I wore a lot of those jerseys that never showed up in games, or even NHL teams. There's two of those that I dressed games for, but I didn't play, right? So you don't see it on the database. But I got the tax receipt. I got the W-2s from it. But you know what I mean? I don't have the actual games played. So yeah, it's, man, it was a carousel, that's for sure. And it was a circus at times, but what an experience. So many friends along the way.
You mentioned those W-2s. What's it like when you go to the accountant and you say, here's my stuff for the year? Do they look at you like you have three heads?
It's expensive. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Because I have to file in so many states.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, though, there is a company that specializes in hockey players, actually, really athletes, and they're a subsidiary of another company that does other things too.
Makes sense.
They're great. They're great because they work with the PHPA, with our union too, to help our guys and kind of guide them. But it's a mess. Like, I mean, think about this year for me. Think about my 2019 tax returns. I played for the Ottawa Senators for one day, January 1st. I played for the Vancouver Canucks for 2 days. And then I was with Philadelphia, and then I have to file in every state that I was in. Then I have to file in my home state of Missouri. Then I have to file in Nevada because I've got a job there now. So like I have so many things going on. I've got to file in 2 countries, 2 provinces, about 10 states. Like it's just, it's life, man. Like you learn a lot. Yeah. And, like hopefully after this year, like now that is kind of done, I'll just have one state, one city, one tax return from here on out. But we'll see, man. It's rolling the dice.
What is it like now to have, quote unquote, a normal life, so to speak?
Well, it's only normal in the sense that I'm not, you know, taking pucks off the collarbones from 20-year-olds anymore. I still travel a lot. I'm kind of split between St. Louis, Vegas, and Denver, where our studio is currently, at least. That's going to change with the Golden Knights soon. So this year has been strange just because it's been transitionary and to try to figure out if this is all a proper fit. You know, the plan long term is to just obviously live in one city and go from there. So it's been kind of a lot with travel this year, but it's all been for a good reason. And it's been easier because I know when I'm leaving, I know when I'm coming home, I can't be called up or traded or sent down. It's just very easy to plan and to live that somewhat normal life that I can come home, get my groceries and know, okay, I'm going to build out for the next week, make a bunch of stuff to stick in the freezer to make life easy on my wife and kids for a little while. And, you know, I'll be back in a week or 10 days or whatever. So, it has been nice though, not to have the anxiety of playing hockey anymore. I'm completely content with my career and being done with it. I don't have the desire to get out there and do it anymore. I might get frustrated when I see goaltending at a level that I don't think is acceptable, but I don't have the delusion of thinking that I should be the one out there replacing it. So I'm totally comfortable at that stage of my life.
We're chatting with Mike McKenna. I mean, you mentioned all the places you've been and the things you've experienced. How has that helped with your transition into broadcasting, which, as you say, has been fairly quick, seeing as you were just on the ice last year?
Yeah, well, first, I was really fortunate. I mean, that Vegas gave me this opportunity. I never expected it. And to be able to come into it right away in the NHL and learn on the fly like this is a huge leap of faith by them that I hope I would like to think I'm trying to reward them with, but I'm super, super grateful for. I think the biggest thing, first off, more than just the experience of obviously been so many places, is that I have the ability to call in contacts for just about every game for teams that Vegas is playing against. So it's easy for me to do my homework and learn about the team that's coming in, the players, whether it's through a direct contact with somebody I played with or with a coach I had or somebody I was managed by, any of those things. So that's probably been the easiest way for me to equate what's made things simpler for me. So yeah, it's been good. It's definitely been a plus though that I was so many places. Like I said before, like as chaotic as it was when I was doing it, it's kind of paying off now.
Well, and that's kind of where the whole podcast came from, right? 6 degrees of Mike McKenna, 6 degrees of separation. It seems like there's somebody in every corner of the hockey world that you have been connected with in one way or another, it seems.
Oh, it is. It's crazy. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Last season when I was with the Flyers, you know, they had a rash of goalie injuries, and I knew I was a temporary Band-Aid for this, but I ended up healthy scratching a few games for him. And I go upstairs into the press box in some of these buildings, and it was almost like I had to put a greeting line in for all the people that I knew and I played with, and the scouts and the management. And it was just, you know, it was like being at like a Roman Catholic wedding, shaking hands with everybody, you know, peace be with you. And it just, I'm kind of looking around going like, how did this happen to me? This is surreal. Why is this happening? But it's also so cool, you know, to reconnect with all these people. And in that same breath, too, to know that, hey, I have a good enough relationship that I'm with these people that I'm happy to see them and to reconnect. So that's kind of where it comes from. And yeah, with the podcast, it was purely the idea that I should, one, leverage this with in terms of who I can get, but two, just to talk to my friends and try to document their stories rather than try to do something like write a book where I'm inherently scared of like screwing something up or tossing somebody under the bus, you know?
When did you start really thinking about broadcasting? You know, you start to, you know, you hit 30 and you start to see the end of the line. What made broadcasting a good fit for you? And what was some of your inspiration for that?
hey, man, I played till 36. Don't sell me short here, but that's not bad for me for a
no, I know.
You just kept pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. But no, I will put it this way. I had a radio show in college. I hosted Monday Night Metal for 2 years. I love doing that type of stuff. When I was playing in Peoria, I was making, you know, promo videos for the team on visits to the Humane Society and to Boys and Girls Club, because we didn't have a department for that, and I thought it was fun, and I didn't have kids at the time. So I think in the back of my head, it was always there. I started to get these opportunities, and I thought, hey, like, I've got a chance with NHL Network that they at least put me on TV, and then the playoffs started to come, and they put me on when the finals were in St. Louis to talk about goaltending, and I'd never been on TV before, and I was super nervous about it, but I tried to do some homework, and they put me on, and it went pretty well, and I'd been writing for NHL.com all through playoffs, and that was kind of a spin-off of my McKenna in-game Twitter account, and I'd written for In Goal magazine for years, so I just thought, hey, like, I think I can kind of strike the iron while it's hot here and at least make an attempt at it. And even the previous year, though, before I signed with Ottawa, I'd had a couple of auditions in media, in radio and in television, to do color commentary. And I took those very serious, but ultimately decided that, you know, I really wanted to play one more season. I wanted my youngest daughter to remember me as a hockey player. And she was going to be three. It just, you know, it seemed like the right thing to do at the time to play one more season. And who knows if I would have even gotten either of those jobs. I don't know, but that was the decision I made. And really just thankful, though, that I had some people kind of guiding me towards that, thinking that, hey, like, we believe in you. You can probably do this if you really want to go for it.
You know, on your in-game Twitter account, you always go a little bit more in depth, I think, than typically we hear from you know, color analysts or anything like that. Is that by design, or is that just something that's you're passionate about goaltending and you really want to give fans much more of a sophisticated look at the position than typically they've gotten over the years?
That's just me. I mean, I when people are asking questions when I'm analyzing, that's 100% me coming out and how I see the position and how I'd like it to be conveyed to the public. And that's why I love interacting with people with it. I love the kind of the teaching aspect to it. And not that I'm the guru and know all of goaltending. I understand that I think I have a really wide perspective because I had probably 24 goalie coaches and a lot of big gamers, it seems like.
Yeah.
But for them to at least be able to hear it from a pro or a recent ex-pro, it makes a difference. So I really enjoyed, like I say, that aspect of teaching with it and the way it comes across like that. And I just felt like it was a great resource. I didn't feel like that was out there at all. And I also don't like how inaccessible people can be sometimes. Like, you know, I'll get tweets even today at people, oh, thanks for responding. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, I'm on here. I'm public. It's not a private account. Like, ask me questions. I'm happy to answer these because I'm passionate about the game. I love it. I love goaltending. I love the sport. And I just want to share that with people. I think that's the coolest thing.
What do you expect from this weekend at the All-Star Game, going as a broadcaster? And what was that experience like going as a player, four years ago in Syracuse?
Well, going as a player was just a huge honor. And it was pretty late in my career, too. I'm not sure if it was my 11th, 12th season, whatever it was. I'd been an All-Star in the ECHL, and an amazing experience. And bottom line, like, I'd been grinding in the American League for a long time and had some really good years and hadn't been named, and it was kind of frustrating, you know, because you have to have like a mega first half to the year to be named. Like, you got to be good through the beginning of December, and the way my career was, I kept bouncing from team to team, and the first half of the season's never easy when you go to a new team as a goalie. Like, you usually hit your stride by the middle because that's when you start to gel with your teammates and everything works. And but that season, I really hit it off, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, I'm going to finally have a chance to do it. And lo and behold, my wife's pregnant with her kid, and she can't go, right? So, like, she's, like, right up against the due date. But just to be honored like that and to go in such a fun environment, to go and have the glass down, interact with the fans, you know, put a backwards hat on the bench and just screw around and take pictures with everybody. It's what hockey should be. It should be pure. Mm-hmm. It should be fun. You should be free to celebrate and to go out there and have a good time with people. And it just reminded me so much of my childhood. And it didn't matter whether we won or lost, although the inner competitor in me desperately wanted to make every single save out there. But it was fun, you know. And now this weekend coming into it, you know, first with the NHL All-Star Game, I'll be roving for Vegas Golden Knights, which will be an awful lot of fun to do some interviews and stuff. But the American League, to do color commentary for it, for me, is just a huge honor. Because the American League really defined my career. That's where I spent the bulk of it. I loved my time there. I feel like the league grew so much in terms of stature and even professionalism in some ways, you know, bringing in these teams that are all controlled by NHL front offices. It's grown an awful lot, and I'm just super thankful for the career I had, and I was proud to play in the American League. And I think back to the interview I did with Michael Layton for 6 years with Mike McKenna, and Michael Layton said, you know, kind of the same thing, like, hey, you know, he had this career, but he wasn't very good NHL, or didn't spend a lot of time in the NHL, and which to me, like, he had an amazing career in the NHL regardless, but he said it too. He's like, I was proud to play in the American League. I was proud to set a shutout record there. And I think that's a common theme, especially for veteran guys in the American League. We take pride in it, and, you know, we love what we do, and that's what propels us forward.
Chatting with Mike McKenna, who's an analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights now. He's played with a pile of NHL and AHL clubs over his career. Sticking with the All-Star theme, is there I'm a big skills competition guy. Like, the game is the game, and I can take it or leave it, but I get excited every year for the skills competition. Is there an event that you like perhaps the best at the skills competition? And when it comes to hardest shot, how accurate do you think those guns are as a guy who's seen a lot of those come your way?
Oh, man, that's a great question on a lot of different levels. I'll actually be honest. I don't think the goalie section is very good. And it's not the league's fault. It's not anybody's fault. It's just the way it is, you know, to do rapid fire shooting. And I remember my session, I had three guys jump the gun and pop them in on me, and it still counted, you know. And of course, there's somebody listening to this going, oh, what a goalie answer that is. He probably thinks that they don't get the shots right in the buildings either, which they don't, by the way. You know, I love the breakaway relays, just the one-on-one battle for goalies. I loved shootouts when I played them. It's accuracy shooting and hardest shot to me are the two. Like, if you want to bring people to their feet, those are just incredible. And I think they relate to me being a goalie. And I think the guns are pretty accurate. I mean, I remember Colin Miller, when I played against him and he was in Manchester, I remember thinking, this guy's got an absolute missile. And sure enough, he cracks one 105-2, I think it was, at the All-Star game. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I don't doubt that for a second. And think about this too, guys. Like, you're only getting the people at the All-Star game. There's plenty of people around the league that can crank that thing. So yeah. That's impressive. Accuracy shooting, same way. And for a non-goalie thing, fastest skater is always – that's what really gets the attention of people around the league too. Like, hardest shot, fastest skater. And I remember Anthony Greco, like, we were teammates in Springfield, and we all knew that this guy was – like, he was Mike Gartner times two, like the fastest guy we've ever seen. And, you know, his first year too, he probably had 1,000 breakaways. And I remember pulling him aside and going, like, we need to teach you how to score breakaways, because you're going to score 30 if you do. Well, look what happened last year. He did. He's potted like 35 or 7, and he won he set the world land speed record in the fastest skater competition. So those ones are always a lot of fun to watch, just to see if anybody can break a long-time record.
Should they put goalies in the fastest skater?
No, don't do that to us. No. Like, we already look like dancing polar bears out there. Don't torture us, you know? Like, I remember they did it the 1 year, though. Like, I think they sent him in the NHL, and Tim Thomas went, and he just, like, went absolutely balls out and was flying. I mean, it was fun to watch, but the novelty of it, and I'm just thinking, like, crossing over, like, I need two helmets, you know, like there's a good chance I lose it in turn three. So leave us out of that one, please.
Can you take us back to that experience last year when you kind of went quote unquote viral? What is that experience like? I mean, most people will never in their entire lives go viral, quote unquote. And you've been through that. Every time you turn on your phone or the computer, you see in your name. What is that experience like?
It was odd to say the least. When you're playing in the National Hockey League, though, you know these things can happen. You hope it's as a goalie, it's not because you allowed a field goal. You know, that's what you don't want to go viral for, is a goal from like the other hash marks or something. I just tried to take it in stride. I mean, in all honesty, Mike, my personal life and my family life was like in the gutter, like absolutely as bad as it could get. I was away from my family for 4 months. My dog went diabetic and nearly died. Like, this is tip of the iceberg stuff. I blew two radiators on a car. Like, you know, I don't want to pity party people, but I was in a really dark place for a long time in January and February where I didn't know when I was going to see my family again. And I think the only way that I kind of got through it was through humor, like just making fun of it. And the situation was almost so surreal at times that I just decided to roll with it and try to enjoy it, try to take it for what it is. And like, hey, like there's people who are going to probably be listening and be like, oh, this guy's making millions. And it's, well, yeah, I mean, that's great. Like, that's, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't quit because, yeah, I got a down payment on a house and a car out of this, you know, and my kids are going to college for a while. But it's tough, you know, like you miss those everyday touches and feelings you have with your children, right? Where, you know, my kids were young. They're a kid in kindergarten who was in three kindergartens last year and a young one who couldn't understand why I wasn't coming home. And it was tough. It was a really, really hard year. But looking back on it, though, I know that our family appreciates everything that much more. And yeah, too. It was kind of cool, though. Like, my story was so crazy that I'm glad people could at least kind of share it and at least learn about it, too, right? And know that it wasn't just something frivolous that you throw away and go, oh, cool, new city, here I go. Like, there's more to it. There's a human element and there's depth to it. And on top of that, you're trying to perform in the best league on earth and not look like an idiot out there, you know? So,
yeah.
It was challenging for sure, but I'm glad it's over, but I'm also glad some of the lessons we learned doing it.
What is life like? I mean, because so many players are on that NHL, AHL bubble, and many of them, like yourself, were on that for years. What's that mental battle like, that, you know, just the logistical battle of going through that kind of year in and year out?
For me, it turned into part of the reason why I was completely content with ending my career. Mm-hmm. I hated packing a U-Haul twice a year. That took 3 weeks off my life every season. That wasn't fun. You'd pack it for a week, you'd drive it, you unpack it for another week, and then you'd have to repeat again in the springtime. And that was awful. It wasn't any fun at all. And then when you throw kids in the mix, it got even more difficult. So that was one aspect, but two, just not knowing the uncertainty, when you can be called up and sent down. And we all know it when we sign up for it, and I was fully aware of it. But you also kind of have that glimmer of hope fade as you get older. I remember the 1 year I was with Arizona, and I was playing in Portland, and like I was leading the league in save percentage, goals against, by like mid-January. They trade Dubnyk, and I'm thinking, this is it. This is my chance. Like, I'm 31 or whatever, like, I've earned it. I know I'm getting it. It's going to happen. And I didn't. I wasn't called up right away. I was carrying the mail, doing everything I could. And I finally get called up. And the day I hit the guarantee in my contract, money-wise, I got sent down, you know, and I got one start. And that's kind of the turning point in my career where I was like, you know what? I'm never going to make it. Like, I knew it. Like, it's not... it's just a reality, man. Like, I knew at 31, 32, like, I'm not going to turn into full-time. Like, I don't know how Tim Thomas pulled that one off, but it was going to take me – it was going to take two guys ahead of me having, like, season-ending injuries and me going up to the National with a team that's good first off and absolutely lighting it up for 20 or 30 games to even have a sniff at being able to stick around. And I just never got that. You know, the only, like, real chance I got was with Tampa – and I wasn't ready. I was 3.5 years into a career. I'd never been in NHL training camp. Started off fine, and then it just kind of went downhill from there. And then the last year with Ottawa, it was Ottawa. Like, that, I don't know what kind of success we could have had there. It's all relative when you're allowing 40 shots in the NHL. So if that sounds harsh, I'm sorry. It's true, though, you know? So that's kind of the way the life was for me, and that's why I just decided, you know, I think I've gotten what I could out of this game, and it's the right time to step away from it.
Free agency, two parts to that. Did you ever consider signing an NHL deal for a little bit more stability? And then what is that general, just that free agent experience like every summer, you know, looking for a job pretty much year to year?
Well, here's the hard part of that. There's not many just straight up American League contracts for goalies. Mm-hmm. Like, if you sign and you're going to play in the American League, they want you on an NHL contract. So that's kind of the reality of it. There are a few of those out there that you'll see. They're rare. If somebody had offered me a 3 or 4 year American League deal for good money when I was, you know, 31, I would have taken it for sure.
Yeah.
Especially in a city that I enjoyed. Late in my career, I will say, though, that I did have that chance. I had a decision to make between taking probably a little bit more money in the American Hockey League or on an AHL deal in a city that I didn't want to play in, just straight up honest, or going to play for Dallas's organization for a little bit less money on a guaranteed side at least, but an opportunity to play in Austin and potentially be called up to Dallas. And to me, to my family, it was a no-brainer. You know, we'd had Austin as a bucket lister for a long time and Dallas as an organization, and it ended up working out, you know. It ended up working out that we went to the Calder Cup Finals, had the most fun I've ever had. Got to work with a goalie coach named Jim Bedard, who made every day so much fun, and we accomplished so much together as a team. And can't say enough good things about that organization. So trusting my gut ended up being the right thing. The only thing that was a drawback there was that if I'd taken that American League deal, I probably would have gone to the Olympics. And I was in pretty heavy talks with USA Hockey for that. But ultimately, my heart just wasn't in it. Like, I kind of felt like the Olympics that year were, like, for lack of a better term, they were just kind of a sideshow. Like, they didn't have the NHL players. I felt like there was a really, really good opportunity to be set up for failure on a worldwide stage that at that point in my life, I really just didn't want to do it. Like, my heart wasn't in it. So it turned out to be a great decision to go to Texas. And, you know, it just proves sometimes your guts, usually your best option.
Was there ever a team or a city that you would have liked to have played at some point, and just for one reason or another, you never could make the timing work?
Yeah, Austin was that for a long time. I just thought that would be a cool place. So when that offer came, it was like, boom, we're going there. But, you know, I think realistically, anybody who plays long enough in the American League wants to play for Hershey or wants to play for Chicago. They're just the legacy franchises that have that reputation. And flirted really hard with Washington and Hershey 1 year. I know I had somebody in my corner that could have made that happen, and it didn't go that way, which was a huge bummer. The guy they ended up going with actually ended up getting hurt, like, right at the start of the season, missing the whole year, ironically enough. So that was one, and then another was Chicago, which I thought I was in line for too when St. Louis went there. But the Wolves already had a goalie under contract, so that one I missed out on too. But I think with, like, my career especially, you play long enough, like, you flirt with these teams, and it may just not be the right timing, or it doesn't happen. Yeah. And you know, people that I know and I really like in the game, like Wendell Young, is, I consider, a friend. I really like him. I've been around him a lot, and, you know, the timing just never worked out there. And Maybe I beat Doug Yinks too many times at the tennis tournament in Hilton Head for it to ever work in Hershey. But yeah, those would have been two places I think I would have really enjoyed getting to.
When you talk about dealing with being an AHL goaltender, being on that bubble, even just being a backup goaltender, to me it seems like a pretty similar mindset to what a lot of people in normal life would deal with when they're looking at a job or a position where there aren't many openings. How do you deal with that mentally to try to stay in a positive headspace and not get down on yourself if you're not reaching that goal yet that you're shooting for?
Well, that's why I don't set goals. I honest to God, I know that there's people that write these books out there that you have to do goal setting and everything else. And my only goal for myself is to perform the best I could. I just felt like if I left everything on the table, that was my goal. It's so easy to fall short on your goals. You know, like if your goal is to win a championship every year, well, you know what? You're not going to do that. And why are you setting goals that are so lofty at times that you're setting yourself up for disappointment? So I tried to make my own inner goals realistic in very short term and just one day at a time things. For me, I knew I had to be in the top 10 in the league every year if I wanted a job. So that's pressure. Like, that's real pressure.
Yeah.
I felt that. And I remember one season thinking, like, I'm doing terrible. I'm going to get traded. And I got a phone call from the GM of the team I was on. And I remember picking up the phone and going, "Help, this is it. I'm getting dealt." And I was actually getting called up. And it was like the greatest moment of my life, the biggest relief ever. But it's real, you know, like, and it's really stressful. But I think I always had solace in the fact that I went to college, I got my degree, I did that on purpose. I didn't want to be somebody who had nothing to fall back on. And even today, like, hockey's done. You know, I'm doing broadcasting now. If broadcasting doesn't work, I've got other stuff I can do too. So I've always had that comfort level of not being so freaked out by the fact that my job could go away in a year. I never wanted it to by any stretch. But it was definitely a motivating force, just knowing that, hey, like, every year I got to keep improving. I got to be better than these kids that are coming out if I want to keep my career going.
A few more minutes here with Mike McKenna, who's working as an analyst with the Vegas Golden Knights these days, but a lengthy playing career all over the continent. With that in mind, you played in the American Hockey League for a long time. Were there any misconceptions that you have heard over the years about the league, or that you continue to hear now, perhaps from people who aren't as familiar, you know, with what the American League is all about?
You know, it's really tough to see people knock it down so hard sometimes that are just NHL focused.
Yeah.
And I mean that even within hockey. You know, there's people in hockey that don't have a clue what's going on in the American League. And it's a battle to get that recognized at times, because if you want to point to the people that are the future of your franchise, 90% of players that play in the NHL came from the American Hockey League. Whether it was one game or 100 games or 300 games, they came from the American League. So something special is going on there that needs to be paid attention to and respected. So it's difficult for me at times to fight against that. You know, like, it's been a point of myself, even like with broadcasts this year, like I constantly want to try to make sure we're getting a look into the prospects, and whether it's American League or Major Junior or anywhere else, I think that that's something that's valuable to fans, for them to understand why their players are there, why teams take the time to develop them. And I don't think people realize just how good the hockey is. And this can be said almost across the board. Hockey is at a higher level than it's ever been right now. You know, you think about where players are coming from, the talent pool, it's worldwide. There's no such thing as a non-traditional market anymore. I don't like to hear that at all. I'm from St. Louis. We've had over two dozen players from St. Louis playing the NHL now. You know, Austin Matthews is from Arizona. Okay, so that's out the window when it comes to traditional markets. It's worldwide game. And if you go see an American Hockey League game, sure, it may be a little bit chaotic because the kids are young, but the skill set's there. Like, go watch the skills comp this weekend. Somebody's going to put a puck over 100 miles an hour, and somebody's probably going to go 4-for-4 or 4-for-5 in the accuracy shooting just like the NHL. So
yeah,
that perception that it's a lesser league, that's no good, it's just, you know, old guys playing it out and guys that aren't good enough, that's totally false. It's prospects who are very real NHL talent in the near and far term future. And it's guys who've decided to stick around here and not go to Europe and play in the American League because they love it. One, they love the mentoring role. And on top of that, they're good enough to do it. You know, for whatever reason, they may not have been able to put it together at the NHL level or be consistent enough, but the skill level's there and they have value to NHL franchises. And that's part of the education process and something that I hope to continue to bring throughout my broadcasting career.
You mentioned that development, and there's always that kind of tug of war between winning and development. What is it like from a player's perspective, especially a veteran who wants to win, and you don't necessarily always think about them on a night-to-night basis? How does that sit with older players in the league sometimes?
Well, losing sucks. And uh-huh. if you want to get players who don't appreciate what it takes to play professional hockey, let them lose. Because you're not going to build anything that way. And you can do it a lot of different ways, but if you don't build a team to win, they're not going to learn what it takes to do it at the National Hockey League. That's my opinion. And you don't have to do it by having 15, or, well, sorry, that's too many, by having 5.5 veterans as the rules allow. But you better have 3 or 4 of them that you know are going to be able to play the game and one, be valuable depth pieces for the franchise as veteran players, but two, mentor these kids. You have to have that. You can't just rely on your coaching staff to get the 20-year-olds and the 21-year-olds to understand what it takes day in and day out to make themselves into professional hockey players. And winning is part of that. There's a way to build a culture that benefits the parent club. And I've seen it repeatedly with teams. Like, look at the Washington-Hershey relationship. How many times have they missed playoffs? You know, and how many players have they developed and put into the National Hockey League? You know, how many players did Troy Mann have in Hershey during his time that were a huge part of that Stanley Cup run? Just a small example, you know, and the teams to me that are truly the pipeline that are developing kids, that are bringing them up. Columbus has done a great job. They win a Calder Cup and those guys move up and they are seamless. Even now, you know, they're doing well for them. So I just think winning is such an integral part of development, and you're not going to always put the pieces together for a perfect puzzle every year. But you got to try, and you got to at least give your team the benefit of the doubt and the opportunity to let your players grow as people and as human beings.
How much of that is also development off the ice? I mean, I think we've all heard some of the horror stories, young guys, 20, 21 years old, credit card, they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to pay their bills. How much of that falls on the older players to sort of help bring them into adulthood, you know, sometimes kicking and screaming?
Well, you know, guys, you know what goes really under the radar? Like, everybody talks about that, just learning how to do the basics, like cooking and paying bills and things. I can tell you this firsthand from being a PHPA rep and on exec board. The hardest thing for most players, because two-thirds of them are over that now, but two-thirds are Canadian or European, they don't have a clue how to work the healthcare system in the U.S. And who gets the calls on that? The union rep, right? So...
Yeah,
I'm. That part of it is huge for the players because they get completely freaked out by it and don't know how to handle it, and it can be a big mess for them. So, that's just one example of a way that it gives younger players an opportunity to really lean on their older guys to help them out and to guide them in the right direction. And the other stuff goes with it too, but that day-to-day life stuff can be really, really important, even as much as just teaching the guys, you know, how to prepare. I mean. You watch people practice, that's easy to pick up, but somebody to use a knife in a kitchen, that's not easy, you know, and teach them how to negotiate co-pays and lifetime maxes when they've had nothing but completely covered healthcare their whole life that their parents took care of, you know. There's an awful lot to this world that they've got to learn and learn quick, and it's part of it. That's what the older guys tend to be able to help with.
Last question. You obviously did a ton of work with the PHPA over the years, and you always have to work closely with AHL president, CEO Dave Andrews, his final season. What are your thoughts on Dave, and what will you sort of take away from his 26-plus years in this position?
Well, I'm very thankful that Dave eventually forgave me for beating him at the Hilton Head tennis tournament at the AHL Board of Governors meetings. He wasn't happy about that because we dethroned him and he'd won it for like 7 consecutive years. that's just an aside. I think the world of Dave Andrews, to be honest with you. I think what he's been able to do, helping guide the American Hockey League into what it currently is, navigating the waters of having rogue franchises potentially starting in, you know, in the Pacific Division and being able to keep them in-house and keep, quite frankly, keep minor league hockey structured and functioning the way it should was a Herculean task that he pulled off. But more than anything for me with Dave, I just think the humility of him and what he's, the way he's treated, and not just his, not just the people who put him there, is the teams and the owners, but the players. This is a guy who comes to our union meetings every year and faces the music one-on-one with 31 player reps and just sits there and takes questions. I mean, that takes a huge brass set to do because the guys give it to him. And afterwards, every single player to a man has a newfound respect for Dave because they understand now why the league has to do things, why they take the stance they do. They may not always agree on things, but he at least tells you the reasons why and lays out why they're like that. And I think having someone like him to help guide the ship has been so good for both parties. We've had labor peace. We've never had a strike or a lockout. And that speaks so much to Dave, and he cares. Like, he's been down in the trenches. He knows what it's like to be a player, to be a manager, to be a coach. And there's very few people like that in the game. And I think that he's always worked with the greater good in mind. And, you know, it's been good for him. It's been good for us as players. It's been good for teams where the league is. And I really value his friendship, you know, at this point, which is amazing to think. I never thought that I'd be friendly with the president CEO, but it is, and it's true, and it's valid, and it's been a great relationship.
Some big shoes to fill for whoever steps in for Dave Andrews, and some big shoes to fill for whoever follows up next week on Around the A, because there's not a lot of people that can give us the insight and the stories like Mike McKenna can. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate the time. All the best the rest of the way here with the crew out in Vegas, and maybe we'll get to chat with you again soon.
I would love that. It's always a pleasure, and like I say, the American League is and was so near and dear to my heart that just talking about it brings a smile to my face. So thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
Episode 15 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, wherever else you get your pods. David Foote, Patrick Williams here. Massive thanks to Mike McKenna for taking a nice long chunk of time with us to tell some stories. I mean, that guy's got so many. He's been around for so long and in so many places that, you know, it doesn't matter what the topic is. He's always got something that's worth sharing, and we loved having him on.
Yeah, it was awesome having him. I mean, he, you know, he brings the honesty right off the bat. So that's huge. And like you said, tons of stories, and you talk to him, you know, afterwards, and he's eager to come back on. So we're going to try and make that happen again soon. And just a lot of fun having him. That was a huge, huge get for us to have him come on and share at least some of his stories. I mean, he has plenty more. That's the amazing thing. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And, of course, you can check Mike out on the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast and his podcast, 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. He's got some real good guests, and not always talking hockey either. We didn't get into his musical taste. He's a big heavy metal guy. We didn't get into his love for racing. So you can hear more about that on his podcast, 6 Degrees, with Mike McKenna. Not a whole lot action-wise in the league over the last week, with it being the All-Star break. So I think, Pat, we'll save the results and analysis for next week when things really get rolling again. But there were a couple of interesting jersey and promotion initiatives going on across the league. Briefly, the Hershey Bears went to their chocolate drizzled jersey, which I think is just such a nice touch for a team in Chocolate Town. But the big winner, and maybe the big winner of the whole season, I might call it right now, as far as promotions go, is to the Broome County Blades. And I know you're all very confused as to who that is. The Binghamton Devils held Slapshot Weekend this weekend, and they redid everything: their website, their Twitter, their in-arena logo advertising. They became the Broome County Blades for the weekend, and I have to give a shout out to pal Rob Lapolis, the play-by-play voice of the Binghamton Devils, who did an outstanding recreation of the opening scene of Slapshot with Binghamton goaltender Gilles Sen as well. They literally thought of everything for this promotion, and I think it played off so great.
Yeah, it fits in really. I mean, Broome County was based off the old Binghamton team in that league back in the 70s, and yeah, it's a natural fit. It's, you know, Slapshot's been done a number of times over the years in hockey, different promotions, but this is a pretty cool twist on it. So I thought it was awesome. I loved it. They went all out on it, like you said, and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, they did a great job with it. And I would encourage all American Hockey League teams to use that as an example for when you're having a promotional night. If you can do it, go all out. It makes a big difference to immerse your fans like that in what you're trying to do.
Yeah, they spared no cost, no detail was left undone. And like you said, I think, yeah, great, great motivation, inspiration for other teams to find something from their angle. This has been a pretty wild year for jerseys. I know you've been kind of beside yourself with some of the things we've seen come out. Tucson with the old Phoenix Coyote style 90s jerseys. Good. And San Antonio did a number of things back in November. So pretty wild times if you're an AHL jersey connoisseur like yourself. I wish I had more money to
buy some of them.
Yeah. yeah, that's the only challenge. You know, when I saw this, I immediately my thought turned to you, knowing that you would be kind of going crazy over seeing all this. So it was pretty neat.
I'll have to scour eBay a little bit in a few weeks and see what's see what's available on the cheap. Let's finish off the All-Star show. We're not making a big announcement here, but if you haven't heard yet, the AHL All-Star Classic is coming back up north. The Laval Rocket will host it next season, and it's going to be a really interesting, I think, for a number of reasons. First of all, it's in a Canadian market. I think that will help as far as fan participation. Not that it was bad out west, but obviously the appetite for the game seems to be a little bit higher in traditional centers, if you will. That word traditional, I think, to me is a big thing. It's going to be in the backyard of the Montreal Canadiens, which, as you'd said earlier in the show, Pat, it's obviously a marquee franchise for the National Hockey League. So I think that's really big. And I think just media wise, we're going to get two perspectives, because obviously everything is also done in French in Laval. And that's going to get, I think, a few more eyes on not just the Rocket and the Habs and what they're doing, but on the American Hockey League itself.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like you said, that French language market is something the league has been really eager to kind of break into. It's difficult to do simply because until Laval, there hadn't been much of it, if any, Quebec presence for the league, other than a few Habs affiliates scattered back over the years. But this is a well well-funded, well-operated team playing out of one of the top arenas in the entire league. And it'd be interesting. You're going kind of like one end of the AHL to the other, Ontario all the way to Laval here, two very different types of markets, but both very strong at the same time. And this will allow the AHL to tap into that market. And then you have all the marketing power that comes from the Habs and everything that they can do. So I think it's going to be great. I think it will be a great stop for fans who really want to make a trip out of this. A lot like Ontario was, where you saw a lot of fans tacking on trips over to San Diego or LA or up to San Francisco. This will be a chance you can come in a few days early, maybe go to Montreal. It's an easy trip. You get on the metro right in downtown. You'd be right at the rink in 20 minutes. It's across the street from the station. It couldn't be easier. Couldn't be a more convenient setup that way. So, and obviously it's close to most of the Eastern Conference, and Montreal is very accessible by air, from just about any city out there. So, it's going to be a really nice setup, and this back-to-back cities now where two of the real gems of the entire league hosting. And this is a nice trend to see. The league had to repeat a host a couple times, in the past few years. But it's looking more and more like more teams do want to host the event. And, that's good news. I've heard some other rumors, teams, markets that are at least kicking the tires on hosting, even beyond Laval. And, when I heard Laval, I was sworn to secrecy about it. But, I knew that this would be a real big hit with fans, and I think they'll really like it. And, I'm looking forward to seeing what the Habs can do now to try to top what Ontario did, because that bar was set really high this past week. And, I think if there is a team that can maybe overcome that bar and set a new standard, it would be Laval and the Montreal Canadiens. So really, really good events and really exciting news, I think, for the entire league.
And most exciting is the fact that it's not too far from either of us, and our sports podcasting network home base is in the Montreal area. So that, I believe, will mean that we'll at least both be there. And I know it's a year away, but we'll be able to hopefully get some exciting content and do some new stuff for this program come All-Star break time next year.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be able to kick around some ideas. We already, the wheels are already turning for us. And, I think for fans, just being able to see, it's always cool, I think, to see what other teams and other markets are doing. Mm-hmm. This can be a little bit fragmented just because of the heavy divisional play. So, I think fans, let's say if you're a fan in, I don't know, Texas, and you go up to Laval and, this other area of the league, it's going to be neat just to see like, okay, this is what they do up here, and this is what we do down in Texas, or vice versa. And, we saw that this year in Ontario. So I think anything that you can do to try to pull the league together in a little bit more cohesive way, which is not easy, obviously. You're now a league stretching from Southern California all the way up to Quebec, 31 teams, soon to be 32. Again, that sense of kind of common purpose or commonality just around the league is tough. But events like this really go a long way to that. And, in a lot of ways, this is the AHL's biggest event of the year because it's something that you can plan for. It's something that fans can make an event out of. It's a nice little winter holiday getaway. And, whereas the Calder Cup, that schedule's compressed. Yeah, it's on very short notice. It's hard for people to do. And, obviously it only involves the final two teams. So this, in a lot of ways, I think, is the real premier event for the league. And it's really neat. I think a lot of fans are going to enjoy it. I talked to so many fans out there, like I said, the Eastern fans, the Western fans, talked to fans from Midwest, from Texas. They were all just really, really pumped up to be out there and see, see a lot of times they see their old friends, like fans from other markets or former players. So this is going to be another nice stop for them. And you can really make a whole weekend of it. We'll run Monday or Sunday, Monday, just like this year. So you can get up there a few days earlier, maybe a few days afterward, and really make a go of it and have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, All-Star Classic gets a lot of content for us here at Around the A. It's been a pretty long episode, so we'll wrap it up now. We are back next week. Everything will be back to normal, all the news, notes, and highlights from around the league. And again, if you want to interact, find us on Twitter at Around the A Pod, or send us an email at aroundtheapod@gmail.com. We'll wrap it up for now. For Pat Williams, David Foote, big thanks again to Mike McKenna, and thanks to you for listening to episode 15 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.